You're listening to the Vacation Rental Managers Podcast with Sarah and T.
Sarah stands for me, Sarah Bradford, a 15-year vacation rental company owner in Colorado who sold the company for big bucks last year.
And T stands for me, Tim Cafferty, who's still moving and shaking with two companies, Outer Banks Blue and Sandbridge Blue, in North Carolina and Virginia, respectively.
Between us, we have managed over 700 properties, making lasting memories for over 100,000 guests and produced over 150 podcast episodes and counting, sharing all of our secrets to growing a profitable, long-lasting vacation rental company.
We like to call those secrets pullover moments, and it wouldn't be possible without support from our pullover partners, ICND, T-Data, and Sojo. This week, we are going back in the archives to one of the most significant episodes we've ever recorded. We're going back nearly 5 years, where Sarah and I had the opportunity to interview the VR GOAT, Carl Shepard of HomeAway. And what we spoke about was the history of the industry and the challenges the industry was facing in 2019. I remind you, this interview was done in 2019, and Carl addresses issues in this episode that have come true and some issues we're just coming to grips with. So without further ado, let's listen in on the episode with Carl Shepard.
We're back and better than ever. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Tim. And speaking of back and better than ever, our guest today came back to VRMA for the first time in several years. And I am thrilled to have Carl Shepard on with us today, Sarah.
Yes, Carl stole the show a bit at VRMA. He was the surprise guest. Welcome, Carl. How are you doing right now out there in Austin, Texas?
Doing great, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
Carl, I think you are probably best known to our audience as one of the co-founders of HomeAway. You sold your portion of the company a few years ago. Tell us what's keeping you busy now.
Oh, what's keeping me busy now? I still am involved in the industry and in travel. I serve on 4 boards, one in Europe and the rest in the U.S. of small companies, mainly companies that were started by what I call my HomeAway children, people who worked for me and helped make HomeAway what it was, who have gone on to start their own businesses. They're 4 of those companies that I've been involved with, and we recently sold one of those to Oyo Vacation Homes, the one at Leisure in Europe. So I dropped that board, but I remain with my other 3 HomeAway children.
Speaking of children, can you tell us how you built that family, HomeAway? Some of us newer to this industry don't know the story of how Vrbo combined with HomeAway. Can you give us minute-long explanation of a 10-year process?
My partner, Brian Sharples, and I had been given some funding by a company called Austin Ventures here in Austin, Texas, to do something fun. And the fun thing we decided to do would be in vacation rentals, because we both loved traveling using vacation rentals. To that end, we put together a business plan, and one of the things that we wanted to be able to do is cover the 50,000 most interesting vacation rentals in the world. And then we would make those online bookable. That was our first thought about what HomeAway was going to become. To that end, we went out to meet the owners of the largest online properties at the time. And there were 4 of them in the U.S., VRBO, Great Rentals, Cyber Rentals, and A1 Vacations. And they were all basically the same company, but we didn't understand how they could be profitable. They were these little businesses run by wonderful people scattered across the United States.
What year are we talking right then?
2004. So what we discovered in that first meeting with these people, we decided to have a meeting with them. We went to Depot Bay, Oregon, where they were meeting. And we explained what our business plan was and explained we'd like to license their content. And instead, they sort of surprised us and said, you know, this has been a really long slog. And we've been doing this. Some of these were 10 years old. They were the early entries into the category. And we learned a lot from these 4 companies. And it turned out that they all basically wanted to be bought. They'd been working really hard and they wanted to do something else. So we ended up buying them. We bought 3 of those 4. We bought everybody but VRBO. And then to get technology, we bought a company in England called Holiday Rentals because they had great technology. And so HomeAway was simply taking the Holiday Rentals technology and pouring the American content into it so that we would be able to become instantly the largest vacation rental company in the world.
Just like that.
It happened in, we started the morning of February 2nd, 2005, just Brian, me, and an intern. And we ended that day with 60 employees in two countries. And we were profitable on that first day, and we never were not profitable in the entire time we owned it.
And then how did you get Vrbo in that mix?
Well, Dave Klaus is the founder of Vrbo, who was, I think, more hated by professional managers than even me at the time. Dave is a wonderful guy. He and his wife are very, let's just say they don't like to pay taxes to the U.S. government. And they had moved their business to the U.S. Virgin Islands and realized that that wasn't their dream. They are Coloradans by nature, and they wanted to be in Colorado. But if he's in Colorado, he's got to pay taxes. So he stayed in the U.S. Virgin Islands. So he called me up one day and just said, Carl, if you would like to buy VRBO, I'd like to sell it. And this is my price. And I'm not going to say what the price was, but it was a lot. And I said, well, yeah, Dave, I'll buy it from you. Thanks. I'll get my lawyer and we'll be up there pretty soon. So I'll call you back tomorrow with details. And I walked into Brian's office and said, Brian, I have great news. Great news is I just bought VRBO for X dollars. And the bad news is that we don't have X dollars. You need to go out and raise me X. And X had a number of zeros after it. And we're going to close pretty quick. So get those pearly white teeth of yours and go get me some money. Brian went out and raised a lot of money. We happened to be closing at the same time the largest company in France, which was called Abritel. So we just raised a lot more money, and we bought both companies in one day.
Abritel, and what year was that?
I'll never forget it. It was November 4th, 2006.
On the same day you bought both companies?
Yeah, well, it wasn't as bad as the first time. The first time in 2005, we did five with a simultaneous closing of five companies on two continents to start HomeAway. Because we also bought a little company that Mary Song, I don't know if people remember her, but Mary Song had a company called Rent 101. And we bought Mary's company on the same day as Cyber Rentals, Great Rentals, A1 Vacations, and Holiday Rentals.
And so, Carl, as you were doing this, or Brian, as you pointed him to the street and said, go get me money, what was the reception? Were these people buying in completely to the idea of this, or was it a great sales job?
We were extremely lucky. The timing for HomeAway was absolutely perfect. As you guys can go back into time, and Sarah's too young, but Tim, you're not. You remember the bust of .com 1.0, there was a big bust around 2000. And during that period of time, companies had gotten ridiculously overvalued on the internet side. And you ended up having the most famous example of excess was the sock puppet, selling dog food online. And they had a sock puppet that did an ad, and that company raised hundreds of millions of dollars and went out of business. So these little vacation rental companies I was just talking about, Vrbo, Cyber Rentals, Great Rentals, et cetera, had met each other when a banker had tried to put them together and take them public in 2001. Mm-hmm. And the market crashed, and therefore they didn't get public and they didn't get sold. And they had to spend four more years in the desert just working really, really hard. Now, you shouldn't feel sad for them because they were highly profitable little businesses. These guys were making a lot of money off of these businesses because it would just be a man and his wife or two partners and maybe 10 employees. And they were have anywhere between five and I think VRBO at the time had 25,000 properties and they were charging about $100 a year. And you could do that math. They were all doing okay. So it was very easy for me to buy those companies when we bought them because they'd been 4 years in the desert. Over the next 3 years, from 2005 until 2007, eight, the vacation rental industry got hot because we kind of made it hot. So I had no trouble raising the money necessary. I mean, at the time we raised our last private round, we had raised $450 million. And we were the largest funded venture funded company to date ever when we funded the money necessary to do VRBO. So it wasn't hard. It was a hot industry. We had made it hotter. And as you guys know, having lived in it, it's only gotten hotter over the last 12 years.
So I got to ask you, why do you think you made it hot?
Oh, it was really, really easy. People at the time, you have to just look at where the market was. And there was the professional market. We didn't know about the Hatfields and the McCoys. And again, this may be ancient history, but owners were mad at their property managers because their property managers had gotten complacent and they would take a lion's share of their revenue, and they didn't do that much. And you would have arguments with people at VRMA, but they really weren't doing that much because from an owner's perspective, I need my house to be rented every weekend. I want it rented. From a property manager perspective, at the time, they all talked about occupancy levels, and they would get every one of their properties to 72% occupancy before they took the next one to 73. And while that's great for the property manager, that sucks for the owner. And the owner decided that they would vote with their feet, and they went onto these little for rent by owner websites, which rapidly became the devil. Now, looking at it from a pure business perspective, you would go online to these websites and you'd talk to the owners who were advertising on cyber rentals. And they would tell you, I get 80% of my bookings through cyber rentals. The rest I'm getting by people I just rent to every year. I don't need a property manager. I've hired a housekeeper. And I'm making more money than I've ever made. And I looked at this and realized that it was a fallacy to think you needed a professional manager at that time. And I'm making it, I want to draw a distinction because that's no longer the case. But in 2004, you didn't need a professional manager. You needed a great housekeeper. They had them. So you could look at where the growth was. And here's the for rent by owner side growing at more than 100% a year for 5 and 6 and 8 years in a row. And you had the property management side, which was contracting. And when we bought the company, we went in, and I think VRMA, I was amazed at the last VRMA, there were so many people there. And the first VRMA I went to, I think we could all fit in the bar, and none of them would speak to me. I was the guy they would not buy drinks for. That was contracting. And I don't think that the property managers, we tried to talk to them about it, but we were having to give them tough love in a way that they didn't want, which was, if you don't serve your customer, he can do it himself.
I have to explain one piece that I think some of our listeners don't even understand, possibly. Some may not even understand why they didn't want to talk to you. A lot of traditional property managers were mad at you for giving an avenue to an owner to be able to rent on their own. And today, it's almost not even an issue. I mean, they've all come back, which I think is what you're going to say. And Carl, what I want to tell you is that while you were doing that, that's when I was leaving the dot-com business I worked for in Denver, and I was able to rent my place on my own because of you, buddy. And now I have a big, thriving 2 vacation rental company. So this is how it all comes together.
It all comes together. Well, that was what was happening. And for the next several years that we owned HomeAway, HomeAway grew. Our organic inside growth, which was the company as it stands, not through acquisitions, was growing at 45 to 50% a year in listings and revenue. So that made it very possible for us to raise money. It made it possible for us to go public. It also opened up the avenue for a competitor that eventually overtook HomeAway, and that's Airbnb. So Airbnb could not have existed without HomeAway. And Brian Chesky will tell you that.
I don't want to leave this section without getting you to comment on the acquisition of software companies, because didn't that also solidify your better position with the property managers?
Yes, Tim, that was very strategic on our part, is that we looked at it and said, we need to bury this hatchet somehow. And I looked at what I wanted to do with to bring property management listings into HomeAway. I needed to have APIs. And unfortunately, the software companies at the time couldn't spell API. And I'm not trying to be mean. They just didn't understand it. They had no reason for doing it. They weren't involved in distribution. And the only one who did was Escapia, a young man who was a rocket scientist whose name I can't remember right this minute, but a great guy who built Escapia. And he actually understood that a property management system had to be web-based. The rest of them did not. And we looked at how where the industry was at the time, and we realized if we don't buy these companies and invest in them, they will not be able to pivot to online companies. So we bought them. We were very proud to have bought them. We bought those two on the same day as well, Escapia and Instant Software, and we combined them into Homeboy Software.
Chris Kemp.
Chris Kemp, there he is. Mm-hmm. Lost track of him.
No, I think we all did. He truly was a rocket scientist.
Smart. He truly was. So that's how we got into the software business.
I think it's so important that we know our history and our vacation rental industry, as we like to call it now. That just took me way back to another time. So thank you. And interesting to watch how it's evolved.
If I could comment on that for a second, I think it is important to understand history. People talk about globally, if you don't understand history, it repeats itself. Mm-hmm. And it is repeating itself, and it's repeating itself right now.
Tell us about that, Carl. How is history possibly repeating itself right now?
Well, in my view, we have now gotten to where, when I left Homeboy in 2015, I gave an interview and I said, you know, the next 5 years will be the revenge of the property manager, meaning that property managers were going to be needed again in a way that they hadn't been needed in a while, because there's now so many listings. You now have to stand out, and professionals can do that better than individuals. So what's happened is that the leading distribution sites have now gravitated to professional managers, and they've optimized for professional managers. So the history that the industry is forgetting is that owners drive the industry. If a person doesn't own a house, and if they don't make that house available for rent, and if they can't do that because the economics don't work for them, then the industry is not going to continue to grow and thrive. And right now, the major sites are not friendly to individual owners, and that's going to be a problem.
And so as the vacation rental company owner, like Tim and me and our listeners, what do we do with that information you just dropped on us?
You prepare. And the way you prepare for this is that I think that property managers are going to have to start looking at themselves in a way that millennials, who are the coming target audience, because vacation rentals have always been that target audience has been 30 to 54. And I'm no longer in that demographic, but my children are. And my children aren't at all interested in the type of travel I did there and they grew up with. They are interested in experiences. And they're interested in having many varied experiences, right? They don't want to do the same thing every year. This notion of we always summer in the Outer Banks is over for this generation. That's just not who millennials are. So you need to fill those beds. And you need to fill those beds, I think, by saying, I'm offering you more than just a home, because a homeowner can offer you a home. I'm offering you packages of stuff that I can do that are unique to me because I understand my market and the experiences of my market better than any travel agent. I can package this stuff up, and I need to start talking about what is my package going to be that comes with my vacation home. So I think that's activities that's going to be a major part of the growth of property managers in the next several years. So getting yourself a good partnership with activity providers is a pretty important thing.
And I knew the time was going to fly. I cannot believe we've already been talking for more than 20 minutes, but I don't want to let you go here, move on to another section. Before we talk about something else you spoke about a couple of years ago, 4 years ago to be exact, in that interview with Amy Highnote, where you talked about the conundrum of the industry with Airbnb coming in, and then the vacation rental business out there as well, and Airbnb maybe being an urban product, and just to make sure we differentiate our product. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it has almost become like Kleenex. I hear the word Airbnb over and over and over when people are describing vacation rentals. I'd like your take on how we're doing as an industry on differentiating ourselves from Airbnb.
Poorly. We have allowed as an industry the experience of staying in somebody else's home to become an Airbnb. It is a Kleenex. It is just a generic term. We allowed that to happen by not differentiating our product and say, You know, when you stay in a professionally managed property, you don't have to worry that someone else's underwear is in the dirty clothes bin. And you don't have to worry about food that is in the refrigerator that says, don't eat this. You don't have to worry about that stuff because you're not staying in a vacation rental when you're in an Airbnb. You are staying in somebody's house. You are just, this is college travel again. You're sleeping on somebody else's bed. Not something's made for you. We did not make a distinction as the industry. And so that was one major problem. The second major problem is that, and I do put this on the industry association, the number one obligation of an industry association, in my view, is to shape governmental regulations. And by allowing Airbnb to drive regulations for the vacation rental industry, guess what they did? They devalued what a second homeowner is in favor of a primary homeowner, and they convinced cities and jurisdictions across this country that really it's evil to own a second home and rent it to the public, that is not the way cities should operate. So by not countering that, we did not, as an industry, come in and say, you know, there is this established 100-plus-year-old industry that provides great value, that gives incredible experiences, and already exists. It's not new. And we missed that. We all missed that boat collectively.
That's a really interesting interpretation, which I agree with, because I just had somebody write to me in Winter Park the only way we make money in Winter Park is by tourists coming. That's how that place exists. And someone wrote us hate mail the other day saying we're evil because we have vacation rentals on the market because we're taking away housing.
And that's happening everywhere. Fort Lauderdale, which didn't exist without vacation rentals, is now a NIMBY company or NIMBY county. So the notion that we somehow let it become evil, that owners who have skin in the game, capital investment in their marketplaces, who are paying property taxes in their marketplaces, are somehow second-class citizens in their marketplaces, we missed that boat. And the one thing I would say that at the last VRMA meeting that I was particularly dismayed is we're still looking at this as something that we need to fund separately. And they make such a big deal of how you could join this effort. That's BS in my mind. The number one thing, the only thing they should be doing is fighting for regulations to keep the rights of property owners to rent their home second. That needs to be their number one goal, and they still don't seem to understand that. That was the one thing about VRMA I found disappointing after being gone for 4 years.
We want to take a moment to thank our podcast partner, Sojo, who's allowed us to bring you this fantastic episode that we are reprising from 2019. As we take a podcast partner break, let's hear from Kaylee of Sojo, who talks to us about operational improvements, which fits right into today's discussion.
Hey there, it's Kaylee with Sojo. Although some of us may be bundled up in winter gear and daydreaming of warmer days, it is wild that peak season is just around the corner. So now is the perfect time for some last minute, low lift operational improvements. A couple tips from Team Sojo. First, review what amenities you provide and go the extra mile to stand out amongst your competition. Have you considered offering market-themed gifts for your guests? Not only do gifts serve as a super sharp marketing tool, but your guests will have a little piece of your brand to take home with them. They also serve as a great rebooking strategy. Second, audit your reviews from last year. Identify different trends. Plan to avoid all of your past mistakes. Did guests complain about broken appliances or late check-ins? Did they praise the cleanliness of your properties? All of these findings are super helpful in prepping your team for peak season madness. And lastly, schedule the deep cleans and inspections of each property. I know it's painful, but not only does this close the loop on property status, it makes everybody on your team get on board with the idea that everything is in guest-ready condition. All of these details go a long way, and you'll be glad that you're ahead of the curve by the time those spring breakers roll into town.
I have one other thing I want to get to, but before I get to that, I want to make sure we're not missing something else, Carl. Is there something else obvious out here as us vacation rental managers in the trenches every day? What are we missing on the big picture that you're able to see?
I think the other thing that's happening right now is that the industry continues to attract capital. And capital comes in two forms. One is someone who actually knows what he's doing and has raised capital. That's a good thing. And I'm going to use myself as an example, and someone who doesn't know what he's doing, who raises capital. And that can be a bad thing, right? Yeah. So when we came into this industry, we raised the capital and we didn't know anything about it. We didn't even know there was a difference between a professionally managed property and a homeowner managed property. We were that naive. So therefore, we were completely unrestricted in how we viewed growth going forward. Capital is still coming into this industry. The thing I think we all need to be watching is OYO, which is a very well-funded, SoftBank-funded company. And of course, they've had their problems with WeWork, and we can talk about an hour about that. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, they have billions of dollars that they are deploying to become the largest lodging provider in the world. That's their goal. Well, that's going to shake up some people, and that's going to shake up the industry. It's already happening in Europe, where they're buying things in Europe. They haven't been successful yet here in the United States. They will be. And that capital investment is going to be important for you property managers, because you may be find yourself in a particular market where you're competing against a competitor who doesn't need to be profitable. They are just part of a much larger company. And when they don't need to be profitable, they can invest in ways that you can invest. They can give bonuses to owners that you can't give. So be aware that this is going to change the shape of the vacation rental industry. And I believe that the large mega managers in the U.S. are going to have to respond to that first, to OYO, and be aware that when they start responding in the United States, it's going to affect every individual property manager, because it can change owner perception.
Let me ask something on top of that. Earlier, you said one of the biggest trends now is that vacation rental companies are going to have to start offering experiences to differentiate over the guy with the underwear in the bathroom. That's a bad example.
It's terrible, but it's there.
Okay.
Yeah, it's true.
So you're saying that. But then you're talking about what I call mega managers, virtual managers, whatever we want to talk about it, companies that have vacation rentals in multiple cities. I've always said the easy way that I'm competing against the mega managers is I do offer experience, high touch. We won't go into all the different ways, but I don't see how mega managers or OYO or whoever the heck is creating an experience at an 8-bedroom home. But I'm not saying it can't be done. So talk to me about that. The mega manager versus experience seems against each other versus how it's going to affect us together.
Well, let me be real clear. I think experiences are not just the experience of living in the house. That is one thing that we control. We control the way a person feels when they're inside an individual home, right? That's something a property manager can do pretty well with the help of a manager. What I hear OYO is doing is that OYO is giving money on that experience. OYO is giving upfront money in Europe for people to redecorate their homes in exchange for a long-term contract. They're improving the experience of being in that house. So that's one level of experience. The second level of experience I'm talking about is just what do you do when you're in Winter Park, Colorado? You ski, that's one thing, or in the summertime, you hike and you enjoy nature. But being able to package ski tickets, to be able to package backcountry ski guides, to be able to arrange for dog sled tours, that sort of experience is something else professional managers, I think, need to be looking at. And there are providers you can work with and partners you can work with to do that. So there's two definitions of experiences there I want to make sure I make clear.
But how does a mega manager create a great experience? Like, I don't want to stay with a mega manager. I want to talk to someone that knows the area.
Okay. And I appreciate that, because you and I want to do that. What Airbnb has proven is they don't care. And what HomeAway was also, one of the things we used to battle with at HomeAway and battle with professional property managers was there was a perception that a homeowner could not do it as well as a property manager. And this data is old, and I have no idea what it is today. But at the time, we could not convince professional managers that when consumers expressed a preference over owner-managed or professional-managed, when they expressed a preference, it was only about 60% of the time. But more than 80% of people who expressed a preference preferred the owner. They didn't like the property manager.
Exactly. That's my point. Because what I'm saying is Airbnb was successful because people wanted to stay at somebody's house with them down the hall in the bed, you know? And so I think now vacation rental managers, local vacation rental managers, are just one step away from that. But these mega managers are so far away from that. And I think Airbnb has proved that people want the custom local experience. You don't think so?
Oh, I know. I think the Airbnb, first, you're talking about the old Airbnb. The new Airbnb, the recent one, let's face it, the major customers, the major supply there they have are superhost. What's another word for superhost? A property manager. They are property managers, and because they have multiple houses. So what people want is the right house in the right place at the right time. That has not changed and has never, I don't think it's going to change. So on top of that, the right house now becomes definitionally difficult. I believe the mega managers actually can compete because they can do things that individual property managers might not be able to do. They can use technology to make it possible to bring the cost of cleaning services down. They can use technology in ways that smaller property managers can't. They just have to have boots on the ground. At Turnkey, for example, we review all that. I'm on the board of Turnkey, full disclosure, but all cleaning is reviewed out of the Philippines, and it's compared to photographs that we have required of this is how this house has to look when you leave. And you don't get to leave the house until the house looks that way. And that's done online instantly in our cost plummet because we'd have to review the house. So there are things that mega companies can do with technology that are going to affect the experiences. That's why I think if you're going to go the other direction, you want to go and hype the personal touch. You want that to be in your brand. You want that to be in your actual experience. That personal touch should include the level of touch the customer wants. When I come to visit you, I hope that I can pick up my key and shake your hand and walk away and see you again when I check out. That's what I consider to be a great experience. But there are many people who want to say, can you get me a cook? Can you get me a cook 3 nights a week? I'd like those sorts of things. I think we need to start providing through professional management.
I hear you. I'm going to let Tim take it now, but I have to give one last word on that. You're assuming that the technology to fix cleaning is working. And I might have a lot of people calling me right now from those companies. They tried those companies that are saying it's not working. So it's not a sure thing that technology works.
It doesn't work every time. So you just have to be on guard against it is going to work eventually much better than it works today, just like everything does as you get systems and the flywheel keeps moving. And when the flywheel is moving on its own volition, things improve. But I hear you. Not everything's perfect.
Okay. I want to take this a different direction. I've had the opportunity to meet your wife, Suzanne, and I know of your sons, Kevin, Connor, and Jack. And since you've been retired, I guess we'll call it, I think you've become very active in advocating for families that have children with intellectual disabilities and advocating for people with intellectual disabilities. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to our audience to explain why that's important and what's going on with that.
Well, thank you. Yes, that is our passion. Jack Shepherd is a wonderful 22-year-old man who has Down syndrome. And when Jack was born, we were presented with all the things that Jack would never do. That's what the doctors and the therapists told us. And how do we get ready for a child that will not progress? Jack is in a college program at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. He lives independently. And he can do that because he has been educated to do it and he's been taught to be independent. So that is something that my wife and I spend a great deal of time with younger parents saying, parents drive how these children will grow. And my favorite quote is, People with Down syndrome are not perpetual children unless we make them so. That is critical. That is our philosophy of life. And how that affects itself right now is we're looking for ways for these guys to work. I would encourage professional property managers to be really reaching out to your local high schools and really looking for employees who can work for you. If you want to do something that's great for society and shows that you are a valued member of a community, employ a person with an intellectual disability in your staff. And I would advocate for that all day long.
Wow. Tim, you always pull out the good stuff.
We're professional interviewers now, Sarah. What can I say? So, Carl, we warned you in advance. We have this inane little game that we play with all of our guests. It's called Rapid Fire, where we try to get to know you a little more personally. We have some off-the-wall questions. You can answer with a few words or more detailed if you like. So, we're going to start the clock, and I go with my first question, and that is, you're a talented guy. What gift or talent do you not possess currently that you wish you had?
Oh, I can't play a musical instrument, and I can't speak a foreign language.
Carl, do you think there'll be something else besides Airbnb and Vrbo that takes over as a listing site in the next 5 years?
The avenue is wide open for someone to come in and provide a better experience for owners and property managers that treats them as something other than interchangeable supply. And as long as owners and property managers will support that site, I think it can grow.
You are a Texan through and through. I know you are a proud graduate of Woodrow Wilson High School in Dallas. What's one of your favorite memories from high school?
Oh my gosh.
I told you he's creepy how much he researches.
It is creepy. My favorite, I am the last shepherd of my father's 9 siblings and my mother's 4 and all of my cousins. I am the last shepherd to graduate from Woodrow Wilson High School. And we all went, and most of us had the same teachers. So I guess my favorite memory was we went to state but my senior year for football, and that was just extraordinary. The seniors of that year, we have a Facebook group. We are still very close.
All right, Carl, sushi or Mexican food?
Oh, with my wife, it's Mexican food because that's what she prefers, but God, I love sushi.
Okay, how about what book are you currently reading?
Oh gosh, I was afraid you're going to ask me. The Midnight Assassin. It is about the first serial killer in the United States in Austin, Texas in the 1800s, who the theory is moved to London and became Jack the Ripper.
Is your favorite movie a horror movie?
No, I'm a sap. I can't look at anything that scares me. I'm victimized right now because I do my favorite, my movies are all driven by what Jack wants to see. So this, coming off of the summer term, I haven't seen that many new movies. I am looking forward to a couple of things that are coming out around Christmas. But I don't really
know. Come on, give us your favorite movie, like one of your favorite movies.
Oh gosh, I would have to go way back. I guess my favorite movie of all time, there's a tie between Casablanca and It Happened One Night.
Couple more for me. All right, you are a undergrad of TCU, the Horned Frogs, and you went to graduate school at the University of Texas. You consider yourself a Longhorn or a Horned Frog?
I'm a frog, man. TCU won last Saturday, and I was fine. I purposely wore purple at every hardware store I went to last Saturday.
Okay, Carl, last question for me. When you sold HomeAway to Expedia in 2015, looking back, do you wish you had sold it earlier is one option, or when you sold it, good, 2015, or waited?
I'm glad we sold it in 2015. I think Brian and I were ready to put it in the hands of a much larger company. I wish if I had everything to do over again, I would have gone public in 2008 and not 2011. That's the one change I would have made there.
Why is that?
Because I think we missed some growth that we could have that would have powered us for shareholders value in that between 8 and 11 because we grew rapidly. The problem was 8 was a really lousy year to go public. But if we had gone out, and we were almost there. We pulled an S-1 at the very last minute in 2008. The market just wasn't there for IPOs in general. But I really think hindsight 2020, that would have enabled us to really cement vacation rentals in the minds of an owner and probably thwarted a little bit of Airbnb's momentum.
Okay, last one from me. You may not be able to do this in Austin with the traffic there, but if you're out on the highway and you're driving along and you turn up that radio because you hear that favorite song, what is your jam?
Oh, gosh. I will always listen to Lyle Lovett sing anything he wants to sing. So what is always in the CD player in any car I'm in or on Spotify is the Lyle Lovett catalog, followed by Emmylou Harris.
Okay.
I like this guy, Tim. I mean, I didn't even meet him until the panel. Where have you been, Carl? Come back.
We need to come
next year again because it was so much fun this last year.
Well, we'll look forward to
you like to be a little ornery. You can just say whatever you want, right?
I am pretty much untouchable at this point.
What a treat. I hope everybody got a lot of takeaways. I know I certainly made a page and a half of notes myself, Sarah.
Yeah, and thanks for helping me create companies. Back in 2007, I guess I have to send you a present or something.
Wine is always accepted.
Okay. Thank you again, Carl. It's really fun conversation.
I've enjoyed it, and I hope you guys have a great afternoon.
Okay. All right, Sarah. See you next time. So long, everybody.
All right. Bye-bye, Tim.
Hello, citizens. It's me, your former president. You just listened to the Vacation Rental Managers podcast with Sarah and T, hosted by Tim Cafferty of Outer Banks and Sandbridge Blue, and Sarah Bradford, former owner of two vacation rental companies in Colorado, now helping other VR company owners to thrive and grow. Today's episode was brought to you by Sojo, our podcast partners who are on a mission to make turn days suck less by automating your guest amenities. Never order or kid amenities again. I'm giving you a presidential order to visit getsojo.com/Sarah and T to claim 30 days of free guest amenities exclusively for Sarah and T listeners. I want to give special thanks here to ICND for hosting Sarah and T's website. Now, I want to be very clear about something. These two fellow Americans love to hear from their listeners. You can reach out to them on Facebook, LinkedIn, or their website, sarahnt.com. They always love to read a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app, so I'm urging you to give them your support. If you vote in favor of this episode, share it with a fellow citizen. Sarah and T will be back with a new episode very soon.